welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a listener of the week. It's Tashreema Hossein. She emailed me, quote, "I'm a huge fan of your podcast, exclamation mark. Thank you for all the incredible insights and ideas your podcast, Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, provides for aspiring change makers," end quote. Tashreem, I don't know. Welcome. All right, welcome is not part of the show. The title of the show, the name of the show, is Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Try to, if you're gonna shout us out, try to get it right. And also, aspiring change makers. I don't appreciate the qualification. These are engaged change makers. They're doing it. They're not just hoping, aspiring, trying to make change. Tashreema, grateful for the love. Thank you very much, and for loving Nonprofit Radio. Congratulations on being our listener of the week. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with a paronychia if you pointed out to me that you missed today's show. Music to major gifts. No one dreams of being a fundraiser. It's a nonprofit truism and Mitchell Linker's new book. He and his music are with me for the hour. On Tony's Take Two, thank you, 2017. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant. And by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. You're not a business, you're a nonprofit. Aplos Accounting, software designed for nonprofits. NonprofitWizard.com. And Telos, turning payment processing into your passive revenue stream. Tony.ma/TonyTelos. What a pleasure. Welcome, Mitch Linker, to the studio. He is a professional fundraiser in education and author of No One Dreams of Being a Fundraiser, My Unexpected Journey from Music to Major Gifts. Welcome to the studio, Mitch.
Thanks a lot. I'm grateful to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yes.
I'm a fan of the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's a prerequisite to being... No, it's actually not. But it helps. No, it helps. Sucking up definitely helps. So, but don't suck up to the host.
And you look great today, by the way.
Yes, right. Thank you. I got a lot of crushing questions for you. Don't worry.
Okay.
All right. So Music to Major Gifts. That's the arc. That's your story.
Yeah. Okay. The story so far, at least.
Okay. Oh, so there may be another career?
Well, given my track record, there could be several, yeah.
Oh, I see. All right. So there may be like fundraiser to French teacher or something? Okay.
You have no, I think I've found my place.
Okay, cool. All right. So music, young age.
Yes.
I'm talking to a former professional musician. That's you.
Yeah. That's you. Professional is a little charitable.
No,
I didn't make that much money.
You made some money.
You made money. Enough to defend.
Not a living, barely squeaking. I know credit cards were important to you. All right, we're gonna get to some of that. All right, but you know we got to start with the early days. So yeah. The Kiss concert, 1979.
Yeah,
very important to you and your brother. You pleaded with your dad. He took you. Why? What happened? Why was it so big to you?
You know, I don't know. It was at a time in my life, there was some personal turmoil going on, you know, and so I think it became something that I could cling to. There was some transitions going on. And
what about Kiss?
I was just a big Kiss fan. You know, I was...
The makeup?
The makeup. It's funny. The music, not so much. It was the makeup. I just remembered like tracing their faces on that old tracing paper.
Yes. I don't remember tracing paper. Onion skin. You trace over it with a pencil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. I just became obsessed with them. And
Who's your favorite in the band?
Oh, it was Gene.
Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
Had to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, yeah. I don't have a favorite anymore.
Is he dead now?
Oh. No, he's around.
Oh, you pay attention. Oh, all right. Well, it still can be.
But back in the day, he was the guy. There was something just so, you know, demonic and terrifying about him that a little boy loved.
You had never seen him live?
Never seen them live.
Your dad took you and your impression. What? Can you remember?
Well, the problem was, which I talk about in the book, was that I got sick. I think I was probably too young to be at the show. I was, what, 7? And, I just didn't feel well. I think the noise, the overall stimulation of it all. I just remember sitting there kind of crying and upset the whole time. And I remember seeing it. I remember seeing Gene Simmons flying. And I have vivid memories of the experience, especially considering how long ago it was. But it wasn't a happy memory. And then I wound up getting sick and it went downhill from there.
All right. That's not a great memory. So
no.
why continued in music? Or why? Well, all right, you were only 7 then.
Right.
But you were still dabbling in music a little bit.
Well, that's
at a young age.
It obviously inspired me.
Yeah.
It was obviously, it's part of sort of the tableau of how I became a musician. Because I continued to be fascinated with them for years and years. So that was sort of my gateway. So, yeah, it was very formidable for whatever reason. I'm sure a lot of people have that story or some variation because Kiss spoke to young kids during that era.
All right. Yeah, but you got sick and then you still continued in music. You know, you're everything is life or death when you're 7 years old.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say, you know, it's so important to you, but everything is, but you know, the Red Wagon was important. But
yeah,
all
right.
But all right. You continued on. So your music career was kind of like, I see like 3-2-1. There were three people in the Dent.
Yep.
Then you were down to two with the Day Traders.
Man, you did your homework.
And then you went, so I read the book.
I appreciate it, but you remembered it.
I do have it written down, but I do remember it. I'm looking him in his eyes. I'm saying,
no
it was the Dent and then the Day Traders.
And then
the solo.
Yeah.
So I'm like, and the Day Traders was two. That was a two-person duet, two-person act. All right. The Dent was important to you.
Yeah,
you
it really
two
was.
Friends. Now, all right. I just want to set the scene. Now, did you grow up in West Hartford?
No. I was originally New York City when I was very young, and then I moved to Connecticut. My family moved to Connecticut.
Okay.
And I've been in Connecticut ever since.
Not West Hartford?
No, Fairfield County.
Fairfield, okay.
Down in Fairfield. And then I've been in the central Connecticut region, like West Hartford, since the year 2000.
Okay. Now, I know West Hartford, I guess as I was growing up in North Jersey, I don't know if this is still true, West Hartford was a very wealthy community because a lot of insurance companies were based in Hartford.
Right.
And then a lot of the senior executives lived in West Hartford.
Right.
That was a pretty exclusive place. And in fact, I remember when I was a planned giving director visiting a potential donor who was a retired insurance executive in West Hartford.
Yep.
And he had a huge house. I don't know, is West Hartford,
as you were
growing up, was it still that way?
West Hartford is a great place. There are a lot of really great quality of life sort of suburban towns in central Connecticut, Glastonbury, Avon, and West Hartford, certainly probably at the top.
Okay. Okay. But that's not where you grew up.
I grew up in Fairfield.
Fairfield.
Yeah. Okay. Fairfield County.
Oh, Fairfield County.
Well, Fairfield, what? The town.
The town in Fairfield County.
Yeah.
Which everybody knows that's southern.
Yep.
That's southern Connecticut near New York City. It's a good place for commuters to live. All right. But there is also a town named Fairfield.
And felt very far. Like when I moved to central Connecticut, like the only time I ever went to central Connecticut was to go to the Hartford Civic Center to see things like Kiss concerts when I lived down in Fairfield County.
Okay.
So it was, even though it's a small state, there are two very distinct areas.
All right. And you were a musical act in, excuse me, in Connecticut.
Yep. Yep.
You made something of a name for yourself in Connecticut.
I like to think so.
The host is choking. Excuse me. Okay. Starting with the Dent.
Yeah.
You and two friends.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Dent.
Yeah, boy. I mean, man, do we go back. I mean, we're talking Jeff and I, my God, we would play with tennis rackets before we could actually play instruments when we were probably 7 or 8 years old.
Air guitar is what.
Yeah. Right. And then we segued to real instruments as we got older in high school, and then we met Dan. So yeah, the three of us go way, way back to like 15 years old and whatnot. And then as we got older, we got more serious and started actually writing songs and obviously playing our own instruments. And then it just became...
Yeah, right. You weren't a karaoke band.
No.
You actually did play instruments.
Yeah, we actually played instruments. Yeah.
And yours was?
Originally, I was a drummer. And then I was demoted to lead singer.
Okay.
Right. And I play piano for writing purposes, but I'm not good at it. I've never been proficient.
Okay.
That's such a difficult question for me to answer. I say I'm a musician. People ask, what did I do? And I give this 10-minute answer.
Well, you started really the drums, piano. Well, it depends how detailed you want to be.
I didn't do anything particularly well.
All right. That's okay. But you played.
I played.
Okay.
I played.
All right. Let's go out. Let's go out for our first break.
Sure.
Which is me speaking. And so if you stand by, it's time for a little break.
Okay. I don't need one, but.
Pursuant. The Art and Science of Acquisition, it's their newest paper to help you bring in new donors. This paper covers strategies that work from successful acquisition campaigns. And you do want to think about this as a campaign, your acquisition of new donors campaign. I know this is fourth quarter, obviously, so likely this is not devoted to acquisition during this part of the year, probably not. So download the report and keep it. Keep it for next year's acquisition work. You know that Pursuant is data-driven, technology-enabled, so the research is going to be based on the numbers. This report, obviously no exception, and helps you to understand your numbers. What metrics should you pay attention to? How do you know whether your campaign is succeeding, etc.? Where do you get it? On the Nonprofit Radio listener landing page, and that is at tony.ma/Pursuant, capital P. Now back to Mitch Linker and his book.
Yes.
Nobody dreams of being a fundraiser. All right. So the Dent was it took time. I mean, yeah. It was hard to get traction.
Yeah.
You didn't have a booker. You didn't have an agent.
Right.
You were recording, doing some gigs. What happened ultimately to the
dentist? It's funny. I would recommend that everyone write a book because for me, even if very few people read it, it was like therapy. And I learned a lot about myself in the process.
Yeah.
And to your question, one of the things I realize in hindsight, because we struggled so much and we were so focused on this dream, but had difficulty, as you say, getting traction. Part of it was, in some sense, we weren't all in. And I realized about myself. You know, I wasn't the type of guy who was going to live in a van for 6 months in total squalor. Like, I loved writing songs. I loved music. And I did love traveling, but I just never was able to kind of make that full life commitment. And I only realized that in retrospect. So I guess that's sort of an aside, but that's one of 50 things I learned about myself in the process of writing this thing. And so it sort of helped me realize, oh yeah, that's what happened to an extent. Maybe we didn't commit as much as we should have. We committed to the writing and like the dream was there, but as far as what you actually need to do, it's so difficult and unpleasant.
Yeah. Maybe you over-romanticized it?
I think so, yeah, probably.
Now, how do you feel about your commitment to fundraising today?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I feel like this is my do-over in a career.
Okay.
But this is what I'm trying to get right.
But as you were a musician, still with the Dent, you felt like you were committed then. Did you feel committed then, do you think? I mean, is it possible to look back and say, you know, there were times when I just really wasn't sure I should be doing it, but I kept on? Or did you feel like you were all in then, but now looking back, you feel like you weren't?
That's a great question. That's why you're good at this.
Cool. I got scored one. Okay. Ingratiating to the host. All right.
Because I think to some degree, I probably always knew. And part of it, and this is another epiphany, I kind of wondered why. I think the Dent, we just kind of stayed with each other out of familiarity and comfort. We were best friends. Maybe that wasn't the best sort of trio. Maybe that wasn't the best partnership for all of us. And perhaps if I had not, I was just so committed to these guys. Maybe if I had, you know, gone solo earlier or met someone else or one of them met someone else, maybe I would have sort of hitched my wagon to a different thing and momentum would have occurred. There was just something about the dynamic of the three of us that in a way held us back. And I think on some level I knew that. I really do know it now in hindsight.
Okay.
So great question.
Interesting. No, cool. Yeah. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of there's some overlap between being a struggling musician band and fundraising.
Right.
You point out rejection, networking.
Yeah.
You have a third one too. Oh, well, a thick skin. I guess that's partly partly that's affiliated with rejection.
Right.
So you feel like some of what you faced negatively with the Dent. And then the Day Traders, you know, actually helped you in fundraising.
Yes. And that's the thing. Well, despite what I just said, you know, in my mind, I was generally all in and it was all I thought about. And as I talk about in the book, constantly pounding the pavement, trying to get gigs, trying to get a record deal. That was the thing we were pursuing.
Okay.
And so, you know, there was a real commitment there. And yeah, it was just constant rejection. Like any one good thing would happen and it would be almost a surprise. It would be so rare.
Really? You do want us to play?
Exactly. Like, what's wrong with you?
Are you sure?
I kind of judge you.
I think you might be making it, you're being a little hasty. Take the weekend to think about it and then let us know if you actually want us to play next Friday.
I'll give you references of people who've rejected us and I can tell you why. So that did inadvertently train me. And I talk about that a lot in the book, which is how you came to the question. But yeah, I was used to rejection. I was used to things being difficult. I was used to the struggle. And when I started to have success in something that wasn't music, which was the fundraising, it was just amazing. It was like this incredible epiphany. And that's the ironic thing, is there were so many periods of time in the early days, in the music days, when I thought, am I wasting my life? Certainly people in my life probably thought I might be needing to make a pivot. But it turned out to be great training. Would I encourage anyone to do what I did as their path to fundraising? Not necessarily, but I don't know.
Everybody's got some path to it.
Yeah.
And it's rarely, as your title suggests, is it linear.
Right. I don't know that I'd sort of have the confidence and the fortitude and the desire that I have now if I hadn't gone through that.
Yeah.
So I have no regrets, though there was a period of time where it felt dark.
Now, you had a day job during, this transition. The 3-2-1 transition.
And maybe that's part of the commitment thing. I never just quit that job and completely did it. I was guessing I was a little too scared. That's probably what I mean when I say, like, was I fully in? I think I've always had a little too much of a fear factor.
Actually, even interesting. Now, I mean, your second band, we're not going to really dwell on the second band. Yeah. Just the two of you, but day trader, I mean, that's not, they're not all, day traders I don't consider being all in. It's not like they're invested in a Wall Street career. I mean, they're in a stock for a couple hours and then they're out. I mean,
I don't
know. Maybe there was something prescient about that name. Who knows? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm impressed by your perceptiveness.
I think about this show doesn't just come together. Contrary to popular belief, I get email like, this is the slapdash show. I love it, but I know it's slapdash. You know, it's not true. All right. So the day job was you were involved in nonprofits.
I eventually landed in nonprofits. For a while, I'd had dalliances with several different random things. And then eventually, I stumbled upon nonprofits. I had no awareness of the nonprofit sector.
Dalliances, good word.
Yeah,
good
thank word. You.
People
thank
don't you. Know, but I'm sure nonprofit radio listeners all know that word, but it's a good word. Good SAT word, dalliance.
Every now and then, I'll pull one out.
Okay.
But that will probably be the only time in this show. So when I first started in development, it wasn't conscious, really. It was more just a job.
Yeah, need a day job to fund my love of music.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Okay. And it worked well for a while. It was very... But then
there was a time where you became a little more intentional about a career in development, starting to... music was not paying off.
Right. I was getting old.
Yes, you were getting older. How old are you now? I think we should set the context. How old are you now?
I am... Wow, this is... Wow.
Oh, you got to come. I mean, you wrote a book about your life. So how old?
45.
Okay, 45.
But I look much younger.
I got 10 years on you. You do. All right. It's a good thing this is a podcast, so nobody can test that assertion that you just made. You can go on the website, make your TonyMartinetti.com, make your own decision about whether Mitch looks younger.
Well, it was sad that I was the one who said it.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. And people should draw that conclusion on their own. I think it is self-serving, pathetic, you know. Sounds presidential almost.
Oh, dear.
Okay. We don't do politics on nonprofit radio. So you became a little more intentional. As I said, things were not going well. Money tight, music floundering, really. Yeah. Your own gig, your solo career, you said you canceled.
Right.
You canceled every gig in your solo career.
Right.
Literally canceled every gig. Is that?
Yeah. And then the ironic thing is that when I think I feel like I actually started to find my voice and got better at music, I was at a point where I was too late. Like I said earlier, I was in these bands and I felt beholden to these other people. And then when I finally went solo, I felt I got a groove. But at that point, I had a lot of debt. I was getting older. And then what really happened was the recession. The
economy tanked out.
And I just felt I felt so vulnerable. And I thought, well, I'm already in development. I'm going to make this my thing. And I just completely abandoned music at that time.
Okay. Now around that, you were doing database management and then you moved into prospect research.
Yeah.
Is this around this, right? Is this late 2007, 2008 recession time or?
A little bit earlier, I was doing what you just said, advancement services. Then I was broadening it a little, but it was still not, I wasn't doing major gifts yet.
So,
I was sort of the research guy.
Still back office.
Yes,
not frontline.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You talk about, two bosses who discouraged you and one who encouraged you.
Yeah.
The discouraging ones. What we want to, it's a little cautionary tale. How did they discourage you in your, because you had expressed an interest to them in
a
career in fundraising and furthering your work in fundraising, and two people discouraged you. How so?
Well, I think in hindsight, maybe I would have discouraged me too, because I was still kind of like a young punk. You know, I guess I still kind of had an air of,
You worked for them. I mean, they owed you respect. I mean, you worked for them.
Yeah, I mean, it was never malicious, but I think I didn't look the part at the time, you know, or act the part probably. I probably acted young and, I was very vocal about my love of music. So everyone sort of had me compartmentalized.
Yeah.
And I wore it on my sleeve.
Right. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So then to suddenly say, I want to do this very serious, diametric opposite. Ooh, another good word of what
that's
I had
so
been
good.
Doing.
Opposite? Okay. That's not such a good
diametric.
Word. Oh, that's not a good word either.
It isn't?
No.
Did I use it wrong?
No. It depends what you mean. We're not going to flesh it out, but I don't think it's that good.
Okay.
No.
I'm going to move on.
Okay.
So
I'll point out the vocabulary.
Yeah, I've got to stop complimenting myself.
Yeah, you really do. I'll point out the high points.
If I don't, who will?
I'll point out the high points, and we'll let listeners make most of the decisions on their own. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's see. So... let's talk about the guy or the man or woman who inspired you.
Right.
Somebody believed in you.
Yeah.
What did that person say?
A few people along the way just sort of recognized that I had personality that might be
suitable.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I was always
conducive.
Well, that was good.
All right, go ahead.
I think part of it was just I had a lot of energy.
Advantageous.
Yeah. Okay. I think I was. I had an energy and a zeal, and so.
All right. It was a man or a woman?
It was a few people along the way.
A few people. All right. Yeah. Encouraged you.
Yeah,
right,
so, kind of encouraged me. And at
so
that
maybe
time,
we should be seeing people beneath the surface and look at what traits they possess and how those might actually transfer into a fundraising career or anything in nonprofits so that, you know, we peel away the layer. Let's not judge a book by the cover. And there are traits that people have that could be valuable to nonprofits.
And we should try
to see that if we're ever in this kind of situation.
I agree. I'm deeply grateful for that encouragement. Because at that point in my life, I hadn't had much encouragement. You know, I'd sort of just been on my own trying this thing and it wasn't really working out. And then it goes such a long way. And yeah, I agree that it was sort of a raw skill, energy, whatever I had that had sort of a few people had noticed. And I was grateful for that. And I would have never really come to that on my own.
You say that you perceived fundraising as the guys in Glengarry Glen Ross, which happens to be a favorite movie of mine. But
me too.
You know, if those who may not know it, it is excellent. Al Pacino, Walter Matthau, no, Jack Lemmon. What am I saying?
Yeah, Jack Lemmon.
Couple. Al Pacino, Alec Baldwin, very very small but very pivotal role.
Yep.
Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alan Arkin.
Yep.
Excellent. Ed Harris. Excellent. Kevin Spacey.
Yep.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So these are shyster real estate people. We get the idea. You get the idea from the movie that they're basically selling marshland in Florida to people. And that was sort of your perception of major gifts, of asking people for money.
And, you know, part of it, it's funny. I remember I went to this conference early on, and I was doing research at the time. And I went to this, it's very funny in hindsight, I went to this dinner, and it was basically major gift people. And I don't even know why I went to it. And it may have been that it was for everybody, but it was predominantly major gift people. And like the volume of that room was so loud. It was just a bunch of what I perceived as extroverts.
Yeah.
Just really sort of out there, confident people. And part of it for me was a jealousy because I had been so just estranged from that world. I was just, I had a very small world and I wasn't very confident. And then I saw these people and these personalities and I just thought, man, that's what fundraising must be. You got to be this big, outgoing person. I can't do that. That's not my personality. And I know where you're going with this, but basically I came to realize you don't necessarily have to be that way. But it was so intimidating to me. And then when I peeled back what I thought a major gift officer does and what they do, it just seems so scary. And I sort of pigeonholed. You have to be a certain type of person who is outgoing and brave and, frankly, all the things in many ways you do need to be, but it was so different from how I perceive myself.
I don't know how you know where I'm going because I don't know where I'm going.
Okay, great.
So I'm not sure how you've mastered that. This seems like a good place. We're going to play one of Mitch's songs.
Oh my gosh.
It's better. This is the Dent. This is
me solo.
Oh, this is a solo. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
This is the last thing I ever
solo
recorded.
Because things are, you know, he's making his transition now, getting serious about a career in fundraising. So things are looking up. It's Mitch Linker.
Yeah.
Solo. Better. Anything else we want to say to lead into it?
Well, this was never, it was recorded as a demo, but it never went anywhere. I never did an album. You know, I didn't put it on iTunes or anything. This was right at the moment that I basically stopped. So this is the first time anyone in the world is hearing this song.
All right. So it's a podcast, so you can play it back. You're not going to be able to buy it anywhere.
That's right.
No, you cannot buy it.
Give me a call. I'll send you a copy.
Here it is. Better. Mitch Linker.
I say all the time, nothing loses any value. But every now and then, I whisper to a friend, boy, it'd be nice to just get lucky, 'cause we've been stuck here for so long. beautiful for a little while.
Mitch Linker, better. You heard it here on Nonprofit Radio, the only place you will. We need to take a break. Wegner CPAs, they really do go way beyond the numbers that typical CPAs get mired in. The guides, they have a couple dozen guides for you online. They're going to help you sort your way through technical stuff because they break it down and make it simple for you. These are written specifically for nonprofits. For instance, Audit Committee versus Finance Committee. That's a document they have. What are the different roles? They break it down. Independent Contractor versus Employee Checklist. Yes, you need a checklist. I just had attorney Tom Wassell on, who's talking about this. That was the November 3rd show. You don't want to make a mistake between contractor and employee and be penalized. Disaster Recovery Plan. It's another guide that Wegner has for you. I've had a guest talking about that. Dara Viverka. Last time she was on was June 23rd, talking about your disaster recovery plan. If you're a church, Wegner has a church internal audit plan. Okay, you're reviewing your bank statements each month? There's a bank statement review form. All right, you get the idea. Way beyond the numbers, take a look at everything they have. Go to WegnerCPAs.com, click resources, then guides. Apollos Software. You're a nonprofit, but you use accounting software made for a business. I never thought of this. I never thought of that dichotomy. That's a good word. But it exists. And until Apollos brought enlightenment to me, I had never thought about this. Why do you need nonprofit software, accounting software? fund accounting. That's the difference, fund accounting. You have these different designated buckets, funds of money, and you don't want to use the money designated to scholarships for the gymnasium renovation project. Mitch, you work in education fundraising. You wouldn't want to do that, would you?
No.
Thank you. Now be quiet. You need to separately account for each fund. It's critical, okay? Apollos Accounting, don't use QuickBooks and TurboCash. Where do you go for this? Nonprofitwizard.com. Now time for Tony's Take Two. Thank you. Thank you, 2017. That's what my video says this year. If you are listening in any of the different channels, which we're going to get to very shortly, it's coming up. If you are getting my insider alerts in your inbox every single week, I know Mitch Linker gets them. You do, Mitch, don't you?
Yeah.
Thank you. Now be quiet. Yes, I am grateful. If you're following on Twitter, if you're retweeting about the show, if you're loving the show in whatever method, whatever channel you use to show your love for nonprofit radio, I say thank you. I really do. No, I mean, Mitch is breaking up, but my gratitude is sincere. You know that. So if you want to see it on video, go to TonyMartinetti.com. The video is called Thank You 2017, and I do thank you. Let's do the live listener love. Natural flow, right? What do we got? We got Leeds, New York, Tampa, Florida, Woodbridge, New Jersey. Woodbridge, so consistent. I'm in love with Woodbridge, New Jersey. Who are you? Identify yourself, please. I want to shout you out by name. Indianapolis, Indiana. Live listener love to Indianapolis, Indiana. Salt Lake City, Utah. Live listener love to each of our listeners who are domestic and over in the UK. Well, of course, we don't know which country. Is it Ireland, England, Scotland, or Wales? We don't know. I don't presume. Live listener love to the United Kingdom listeners. Actually, it's multiple listeners. Germany, Guten Tag. Sudan, I think that's first time with us, Sudan. Welcome. Afghanistan, you've been with us before. Poland, you've been with us before. Thank you so much. Live listener love to all of you, each of you individually and collectively, the live listening audience. The podcast Pleasantries, over 12,000 of you, our main channel. Thank you for hanging in there, subscribing, listening week after week after week after week after week of nonprofit radio. My God, you stay with it. It's remarkable. Mitch, you do? Don't blame me. No. So grateful. Podcast nonprofit radio keeps you entertained and fulfilled. Podcast Pleasantries to our podcast listeners. And the affiliate affections go out to the AM and FM listeners in our stations throughout the country, from upstate New York to Seattle and Portland, Oregon, and Salem, Oregon, and everywhere in between. Well, lots of places in between. Some places. A good number. A decent number in between. Affiliate affections to the AM and FM listeners. Thanks to your station for carrying us. Thanks to you for listening on AM and FM. Okay, Mitch Linker, we're back to you now. Thank you for standing by. Thank you for your minor contributions. Okay, so things are picking up, and you start to self-teach yourself. You got conferences, books.
Yeah.
You're diving in.
Yeah.
Self-education.
Yeah. Yeah, I just immerse myself again. I completely abandoned music to this day.
Yeah.
I haven't touched
okay.
it. And I just committed myself 100% to fundraising. And yeah, I tried to
All right.
network as much as I could. And
now, this wasn't a cringe moment for you when I played better, was it?
Yeah.
Were you dying inside? You weren't dying inside, were you?
A little embarrassing, but that's okay.
Really?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, I'm proud of it.
Well, there you go. All right. So no embarrassment. All right. I mean, you may feel embarrassed, but...
Yeah, I didn't know you were going to play the whole thing, but that's...
Yes, no, but a sample here. We're all in. Nonprofit Radio is all in, 100% in. I'm committed to the worst humor, but I committed to it. You know, that's what distinguishes. Most people would cut their losses. Oh, no, not me. Oh, I'm in. I'll beat a joke to death. Till either I get sick of it, which that's a very high threshold.
And that's happening right now.
Says
you're
you.
Witnessing it.
Says you. You're not one to judge. I don't know why. I'm just declaring
you. Sure.
You're not judgment worthy.
Okay.
All right. So you developed a you found a coach. You found a couple of coaches.
Yeah.
Mentors. This is important to you as you're sort of moving your way into now. You're in Major Gifts.
Yeah.
And you're blowing some things, which everyone does.
Yeah.
This is not an embarrassment. I have not as many as you, but I've blown things. Coach and mentors. Coaches, very important to you.
Yeah. One of the few key takeaways for anyone who's might be interested in the book or maybe thinking about major gifts.
Yes.
One of them is, for me, it was transformational. And I just think everyone should probably, no matter what you're doing in life, it'd be great to have a coach and a mentor. But for me, having that like one-on-one just dialogue, having someone you can go to and run situations by and sort of talk things out with someone who's experienced and has been around the block and has seen everything.
Yeah.
It really changed my life because I was struggling. I had educated myself, but when I was trying to practically apply what I had read or studied, I just wasn't comfortable. And this guy, and then a number of people who I met, I have a long list of mentors, really changed everything for me. And so, again, anything in life, you probably need people to look up to. But certainly with major gifts, I would definitely encourage anyone to just find someone outside of your environment, outside of your job, someone who doesn't know the players, who can objectively just sort of look at situations and talk you through them.
And if you are someone who's experienced, look to help people. I mean,
we
need to further the profession. So it's not only, of course, yes, if you are new to the profession, absolutely, Mitch's advice is very sound. But if you're more experienced,
yep,
look to help. We got to elevate the profession. Whether it's fundraising or whether it is one of the back office, important back office functions, whether it's gift processing or prospect research or database management, you got to elevate the profession. We all have a responsibility to bring up those of us who are newer.
Yeah.
And it's
so much fun. It's fun to I think most people want to give back and want to help. And the few times I've had the opportunity to kind of pay it forward, I've found it incredibly fulfilling. So you're right. It's a two-way street completely.
And you tell some very good stories in the book about how just simple conversations.
Yeah.
Like in a 30-minute conversation, you'd see epiphanies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Is that a mixed metaphor? See epiphanies? Have an epiphany? Can you see an epiphany? I don't know. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let's stick with that. I don't know if you can see an epiphany or you just... Can you see an epiphany? Sam doesn't know. He has crystals. He's the man surrounded by crystals, but...
I think it's have. I've thought about it. I think it's have an epiphany. Is it
have an epiphany? Okay. So
usage.
All right. So let's now. You're a bona fide major gift officer. You're getting over the hurdles.
Yeah.
Thanks to the coaches, mentors. You've got some practical advice that you like around. Let's start with the donor. Now you're in a solicitation meeting. Donor preemption. Ooh, that was a tough one for you. One guy wrangled you twice.
Yeah.
go ahead. I'll let you explain preemption in case someone's not aware. What are you talking about?
Well, and I don't know that
donor preemption.
That might be a term that I just
it's bona fide. Yeah, yeah.
Basically, when you have a number in mind or a gift you want to talk about, and then the donor, they had you off at the pass
early in the conversation.
Yes.
Oh, don't worry about it. Yeah, I know why you're here. I'm going to give the $3,000 that I gave last year.
Yeah, generally.
Which is, you've got $50,000 in your mind.
Exactly.
And they're committed to their $3,000 gift from last year.
Right. So that's one of 100 things that are the type of scenarios that are difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And you really only know through experience and through having people
experience.
Talking
I mean,
you
the experience
it.
Is critical. Yeah, you do
it
have
is.
To fail.
Yeah.
You have to fail, get some help from a coach mentor, and go out and do it again.
Exactly.
You got to keep taking bites of the apple.
Right. Exactly.
All right, so let's a little practical advice around preemption. What do you like to throw out?
Oh boy,
it's happened. Okay, let's say you're hypothetical. Well, from the book,
right?
You've got I forget what number you had in mind, but let's stick with my hypothetical.
Okay,
50,000. Right. Yeah, you've got 50,000 in your mind. In the first 5 minutes of the conversation, you've greeted the person. He says, "Look, I know why you're here. I promise you, I'm gonna do the same 3,000 I did last year."
Right.
And then he pivots to a different subject.
Right.
Now you're off the giving subject. Thanks to the the donor and the preemption, what's your advice?
Well, it depends largely on the rapport. If you feel a comfort, that's sort of, from my experience, will dictate how far you're going to push. Sometimes you're just going to say thank you and move on and hope the next time you can be more prepared. But, I think
if sometimes maybe thank you, but.
Thank you, but, which is sort of what I was going to say that, if you have a rapport and there's comfort, if you just sort of very authentically and genuinely and politely say, that's great, I appreciate that, but... I've really been looking forward to talking with you. I have a couple ideas that I actually wanted to share with you. Would it be okay to let you know what we were thinking? Most times people are going to say, okay, sure. We want to hear what you had in mind. And maybe it's tied to a naming opportunity that has a certain level that sort of, dictates that level.
Yeah.
Sort of those things that are scholarship at a certain minimum. So there are these tools to kind of help you navigate that. But really it's having the boldness and then the comfort to continue that conversation. And sometimes it goes well, and it really all depends.
Yeah. Okay. You talk about Urgency and context.
Yeah.
You like those?
That's what I learned from my key mentor.
Okay. Flesh that out.
Yeah. You know, context is just sort of explaining, you know, you have numbers in your mind when you're talking to a donor, basically sort of justifying the number and explaining why someone's gift is important. And you know, at the end of the day, when you're raising money, it always comes down to a small number of people who are really bringing in, who are giving the vast majority of the money.
Yeah.
Whether you're talking about a small campaign or a very, very large campaign, it always comes down to a small number of people. And by context, I like to sort of convey that to donors and sort of let them know you're in a small group of people that we are going to help bring about real change, to save and change lives. There aren't that many people out there. You know, you are one of a few. So that's sort of the context
piece. There's actually some empirical research. I was just reading, like, within the past 2 months or so, a report about someone had done some experimentation around different types of materials. One printed said, you know, altogether we can prevent hunger in the community or something.
Right.
And the other was, you can be a change maker.
Mm.
You and so it was the global or the full community,
right,
versus targeting the individual. And that individual marketing piece did much better.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. You are the change maker. You're the pivot. You're the critical link in this,
right,
in this problem in our community. You the solo, yeah.
That's great. Okay. That's great. Right.
So that's your context.
The context piece. Yeah. Just sort of really just explaining how important someone is to you.
Yeah, and urgency.
And the difference that they can make and why. So that was hugely helpful to me in having those giving conversations.
Yeah.
Sort of, and like setting the table.
Urgency.
Urgency is, you know, just putting parameters so that there's a reason to have a conversation at a certain time. Like, capital campaigns are all about urgency. Oftentimes it's a very arbitrary timetable, but it gives you license to talk about giving at a certain time because there's a deadline. You know, political campaigns, it's more finite. It really is. You know, there's election day. But other campaigns, oftentimes it's just sort of a random period of time, but it's a great tool. It helps gift officers, it helps fundraisers sort of justify why you're having a conversation at a certain period of time. So it's an instrument to help move conversations along.
How do you deal with the rejection that being rejected in music helped you achieve in fundraising? I mean, you don't get everything that you ask for from donors.
Right.
How do you process it? What are you thinking about? You know, help people who are struggling with this.
Here's how I feel about that. There are many times when I come out of a visit or situation or maybe after a follow-up and the gift doesn't come through, but I still feel 10 feet tall. And it's because I feel as though I did the right thing. You know, I feel like I asked for a gift that made sense. It was well received. You know, maybe a donor will say, that's the right number to ask for, or I appreciate you coming to me, but now's not the right time, or this isn't the right project. But it's very amicable, and it's not a negative experience for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, there have been plenty of times where I didn't get the gift, but I feel good because I feel like I was brave, and I had the conversation that needed to be had, and it was the right one, but for whatever reason, it just wasn't the right timing.
For the donor.
Yeah. For the donor, exactly. Right. And oftentimes, no is just no now, but not no forever.
Oh, six no's, you're halfway to six no's, you're halfway to a yes.
Right.
I like to say. What about when you walk out and you're not feeling so good? Like, maybe I let the institution down. Like,
right.
There was an opening and I didn't seize it. You know, you walk out regretful. How do you process that and then, you know, carry on? Because a couple days later, you're going to have another donor meeting.
I do beat myself up about it. I, as I get older, I feel like I'm still at the infancy of my career. I'm going to be learning to the day I retire, which hopefully will be decades from now. And I'm trying to beat myself up less about it. But basically, I just try to learn from every experience. I literally will write down how something went, what I think I could have done differently. I'll talk to my mentors. I still have my coaches. And I just try to learn from every experience. And most importantly, I hope that the relationship is preserved and I didn't do any damage. And generally, you don't.
That's key.
Yeah.
The relationship is open.
Absolutely.
You can always go back. It's a long-term. I mean, it's a relationship.
Yeah.
It's long-term.
It's based on trust and absolutely. And it's about the institution. Yeah.
About the institution. Yeah. Excellent. Let's take a little break.
Okay.
Telos, credit card and payment processing. This is a passive residual revenue stream that pays you each month. As one of their partner nonprofits, you are going to earn 50% of every dollar that Telos gets. Half of what they earn from the businesses that you refer to them goes to you. That's revenue with a long tail. They have an exclusive offer for Nonprofit Radio listeners. This really is only available to you. Refer a business. Telos is going to look at their credit card processing fee statement. And if Telos cannot save them money, then Telos is going to give your nonprofit $250. If they can't help the business, you get $250. And that happens each time you refer someone to Telos and they're just not able to save them money. Now, most cases, of course, they are going to be able to save the money. But if they're not, you get $250. If they are, and then if the company does indeed move their credit card payment processing to Telos, you get that residual income, 50% of every dollar that Telos earns. All right? Now, the $250 part, that's for Nonprofit Radio listeners only. That is only for you. Congratulations. All right? So you want to take advantage of this. Where do you go to do it? You go to tony.ma/TonyTelos. That is the only place that you're going to find the $250 offer at tony.ma/TonyTelos. Let's try to get them some referrals and get you some long-term revenue. All right, Mitch Linker. I almost called you Mitch Clinker. Do people do that?
It's been known to happen.
Yeah, sorry. Okay.
No problem.
I admitted it. I mean, I applaud myself for being honest enough to say it.
Congratulations.
Yeah. No, thank you very much. Small victories. It's very important to me. I amuse myself. If no one else, I amuse myself.
I'm amused.
All right. Well, if you're not, I still am. So, and this is the center of the universe, is me. So, let's see where we are. Okay. So, the institution, yes, you're sort of keeping in mind that it's the institution that you're asking for. Does that help you?
Yes.
In depersonalizing this whole process?
Exactly. And I was going to say that. Thank you for saying that.
All
because
right.
That's something that I've learned. And I talk about this in the book. With music, it was personal. When I was rejected, they were saying, we don't like
you're
you.
You're an artist. It's your art.
I don't
it's
like a, your voice. Go
it's,
away.
It's your art.
Your,
right?
Yeah.
You're an artist. It's your art.
It's not about me when fundraising. It's not about the solicitor. It's about the mission of the organization. And that's how you can remove yourself too. And you just want to do the best thing on behalf of that organization because it's mission driven. You're trying to, again, save and change lives. And so, you know, I lament if something doesn't necessarily go well because I do to an extent feel as though I'd let the organization down and hopefully I can do better in the future. But it's not about you. It's not about being a great fundraiser or having the magic words to say or, you know, your career. It's about the lives that you're impacting.
You do have to keep going out.
Yes.
You know, you're going to have to get over the rejection.
Right.
And put on the brave face for the next meeting with the next donor a couple of days later. And for your next meeting with that donor that you feel like you didn't do so well with. You've got to keep getting out. You've got to, it builds your experience.
Absolutely. The more you're out there, exactly, the thicker skin you'll get and the more experiences you have. Yeah. Every experience you have, it's like, okay, that will never happen that exact same way again because
yeah.
I will learn
Excellent.
From that
Excellent.
Moment. So absolutely, there's no, it's not, and this is a funny thing I talk about in the book. It's like experience, but also being reflective and having people who are training you because I spent a lot of time out on the road and I wasn't making progress because I was making the same mistakes again and I didn't have the tools to get beyond those mistakes. So it's a combination of that experience and then really working at it. And I feel like I'm just starting. I learn every day.
How long have you been a major gift fundraiser?
I've been in major gifts over 10 years now. But I mean, I started in research or I've been.
Frontline fundraising.
Yeah, about a decade, 11
10 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that right? Yeah, 10, 12 years.
All right.
Yeah.
You have a love-hate relationship with travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I romanticize it. I do enjoy travel, but it is.
You romanticize it leading up to the trip?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is going to be cool. I get away, hotel, quiet, and then you're on the trip. Not so much.
Well, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. A lot of things can go wrong, especially when you're trying to, beyond dealing with the travel, just navigating all these visits and meetings that may change or be in flux.
Right, right.
It's exhausting, but I feel like a conquering hero when I come back from a trip, though. You know, having been through
That's excellent.
I think it's a powerful experience. And it's so great when you have a trip and you get to see a lot of different people. And this is a point I want to get to, that it's the best job in the world. And one of the reasons for that is you meet so many interesting people you would never meet otherwise. Successful people, people who are doing great things in the world, people who've had extraordinary experiences, and you're given this opportunity to talk with them. And, you know, if you go on a trip and you're on the road for a week and you have 10 or 15 meetings, my God, what an incredible opportunity to see the world through the eyes of these people who have done extraordinary things. It's incredible. The people I've met who I would never have met otherwise.
You got any travel tips for a long trip? Not just like a couple, two or three nighter, but suppose you're out for 10 nights. Years ago, we used to have, what the heck did we call that? Style tips? Tony's travel tips? Hard to believe it would be an alliteration, but Tony's travel tips. Travel doesn't fit. It's not no. So anyway, we had style tips. There was years ago. I used to plead with the regular contributors to give me a style tip or something. My formative years. I was still trying to master this podcasting. Still am. Travel tips for people on the road for, you know, a week or more?
Well, it's funny. I was going to put this in the book and I didn't. So there's more material out there. I wrote sort of things, basically travel tips.
All right. There's going to be a volume two a sequel. Yeah.
So I have many, many things. A lot of it is a real minutia.
All right.
One thing I'll say for fundraising.
Don't hold back on Nonprofit Radio listeners.
Always have backup meetings set. Because you're going to have cancellations, things are going to move around.
Yeah.
So that's something I've learned. I would just be crestfallen when I'd have a trip all set, and then one by one meetings would fall apart.
Yeah.
And then I find myself in a Starbucks just depressed, you know.
Yeah, you're on the institution's nickel, too.
Exactly.
Somebody's paying for this trip.
What am I doing in San Francisco?
All right. Backup trips. What else? Backup visits.
Backup visits is key. What are some other good tips that I have? Do you have any?
All right. Well, yes.
You travel a lot.
What I like to do is, as sort of, I guess these are backups. I'm in town, then I call people who have always said, "No, you know, I don't want you to come just to visit me."
Yeah,
you know, you get that. So actually, sometimes I would go just to visit them,
right.
And then I would build a trip around them. But I'd say, you know, I'm going to be in town to see somebody else in a couple days. Or depending on the person, I might even spring it on them like the night before or day before, because a lot of the people plan giving consulting,
right?
Mostly retired. You know, now they do have, you know, if you get them on a day where they have a doctor's appointment at 10 a.m., that wipes out the whole day.
Sure.
No, I have a doctor appointment at 10. No, 4 o'clock dinner. No, dinner? No, I wouldn't be able to do that. I have a doctor appointment at 10 o'clock. I can't make the dinner. So you run that risk. But, you know, if you're in town for another couple of days, you can still say, you know, so people don't like to know that you came for them.
Yes.
There's a cadre of people who like to visit you, will take the visit.
Yep.
As long as they don't feel that they're the reason you came.
Yes, absolutely. And as related to that, I've found that sometimes it is easier to get the meeting on very short notice. You know, you plan these things far in advance, but there's a real magic sometimes to saying, "Hey, I'm going to be around tomorrow." You know, just so happens I'm in town.
Yeah.
Someone looks at their schedule, they have an opening. Sure. You know, it's not something that you wouldn't plan a trip that way. You wouldn't buy your ticket to go to California.
It's too speculative, yeah.
But there is...
Some anchor visits, you know, pretty solid ones you know are not going
to...
Very unlikely to bail.
Right.
And then you can build the other ones around.
Yeah, and sometimes that short notice actually is convenient for people and works out.
Just remind listeners, of course, that the name of the book is No One Dreams of Being a Fundraiser. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's at Amazon. Find book retailers near you. Well, online.
Yeah.
Find online book retailers a click away. So, you know, live listeners, you can check it out right now. Go to Barnes. I happen to like Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Check it out while I continue the chat with, while we continue the chat with Mitch. Channeling you. Trying to think. What would that person ask? Of course, I don't know who the person is, but I'm amusing myself. Opening yourself up to donors.
Yeah.
You talk about some donors you'll share your music past with, some you won't. But the personal connection means a lot, right?
Yeah, it does. It does to an extent. Because generally, my philosophy is, I mean, you need that personal connection because you want trust and you want a real, genuine rapport. But at the end of the day, it's about the donor. And that's something that I've learned is that it generally, I find that if I'm talking too much in a meeting, it's probably not going that well. Because they're not opening up. I'm not learning from them.
Right.
So it's like you need that human connection and that hopefully a long-term relationship. But it's about their experiences, as I say in the book, their aha moments, you know, how they really feel about the organization, kind of getting to that understanding and that their emotional connection to the mission of the organization you're representing. That's what it's all about. So it's both.
Yeah. I'd love to end there, but we have another minute together.
Oh, good. Well, I have something I want to say.
Okay. Say it in a minute.
In a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I thought you meant say in a minute it, from now.
Say it for a minute.
What's
you're a smart
ass.
For that
all right.
minute? Say it for a minute.
I'm just not that smart. What I was going to say was, you know, getting back to it when I was saying earlier that I looked at major gift officers like they were another species of human.
Yes.
If there's anyone out there who's thinking about the field, working as a gift officer, I see myself, and part of the reason why I wrote the book is to be a champion for the field.
Yeah.
Because I think it's the best job in the world, again, as I was saying. And it's so powerful to be able to help make a difference for a cause and to meet wonderful people. And I feel very grateful that I stumbled upon this. And even if you think you couldn't do it, you should still try it. If there's an inkling of a suspicion that you might want to do it, give it a try. Pursue it. Dip your toe into it. Maybe ask someone you work with to take you on a visit and experiment. And you might surprise yourself, because I never would have thought in a million years I'd want to do this. Now I feel like I found my calling.
That's a great place to wrap it up.
Great.
Michelle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Mitch Linker, professional fundraiser in education and author of No One Dreams of Being a Fundraiser, My Unexpected Journey from Music to Major Gifts. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Next week, Scale Up and Be Sustainable. Kathleen Kelly Janis will be with me to talk about her new book, Social Startup Success. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. That's a good word. We're supported by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant, capital P. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. Aplos Accounting, software designed for nonprofits, nonprofitwizard.com. And Telos credit card and payment processing, your passive revenue stream. Tony.ma/TonyTelos. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and this very cool music is by Scott Stein of Brooklyn. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. Yeah, it was like, yes. It was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gifts.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life, it's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.